जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, 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 यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, 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 यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्ट प्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Text Number 5. Tatra Brahmarshyah Sarve Devarshyash Cha Sattama Rajarshyash Cha Tatrasan द्रष्टुम् भरता पुंगवम् तत्र ब्रह्मर्षयः सर्वे देवर्षयश्च सत्तमः राजर्षयश्च तत्रासन् द्रष्टुम् भरत पुंगवम् तत्र ब्रह्मर्षयः सर्वे देवर्षयश्च सत्तमा राजर्षयश्च तत्रासन् द्रष्टुम् भरतपुङ्गवम् तत्र ब्रह्मर्षयः सर्वे देवर्षयश्च सत्तमा राजर्षयश्च तत्रासन् द्रष्टुम् भरतपुङ्गवम् Mataji's. Tatra there. Brahmarshayah, rishis among the brahmanas, sarve all, devarishayah, rishis among the demigods, cha and sattama, situated in the quality of goodness, rajarishayah, rishis among the kings, cha and Tatra, in that place, Asan, were present. Drashtum, just to see. Bharata, the descendants of King Bharata. Pungavam, the chief of. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Just to see the chief of the descendants of King Bharata, Bhishma, all the great souls in the universe, namely the rishis amongst the demigods, brahmanas and kings, all situated in the quality of goodness, were assembled there. Purport. The rishis are those who have attained perfection by spiritual achievements. Such spiritual achievements can be earned by all, whether one is a king or a mendicant. Bhishmadeva himself was also one of the Brahmarishis and the chief of the descendants of King Bharata. All rishis are situated in the quality of goodness. All of them assemble there on hearing the news of the great warrior's impending death. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam rupah kada mahiyam dadati svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam tam sajivam Sadvaitam savadhutam Parijana sahitam Krishna Chaitanya devam Shri Radha Krishna padan Sahagana lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanusute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama
Rama Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So we are reading from first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the passing away of Bhishma Deva. And in this verse we understand how Bhishma Deva is about to depart. He is lying on the bed of arrows. And as Prabhupada writes, to attain spiritual perfection, one need not be renunciant externally. Anybody can attain spiritual perfection, whether one is a king or a mendicant. And Bhishma Deva was the personification of this principle. Living in a palace and in the middle of all the intrigues of the palace life, diplomacy, politics, still he managed to maintain his pure devotional service to Krishna. He was a perfect example of somebody who has to be in this world but not of this world. He was deeply steeped in pure devotion and fixed up entirely. And he is one of the 12 Mahajans, great authorities on the science of God. And personality who could have been easily misunderstood. But as it is said that the whole world sees us outside in, but only Krishna sees us inside out. He understands our intention. The two of the greatest devotees of Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were Arjuna, of course the Pandavas, and Arjuna was the closest, and then Bhishma. And one would doubt, why was Bhishma, being a pure devotee of Krishna, siding with Duryodhana always? So that is where we understand what surrender is. It is easy to surrender to Guru and Krishna when situations are favorable. But the limit of our surrender is tested when the situation is unfavorable and we still have to serve Krishna. And that's what Bhishma was doing. For Arjuna, it was easy to be with Krishna. He was always with Krishna. Krishna was siding with them, associating with them. And Bhishma had to play a very, very important role in Krishna's Leela. As His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj once said, the Lord teaches the world through those whom He loves the most. And Krishna, through the Pandavas, He taught a very powerful lesson that no matter who you are, the world is such a messy place that even if you are the most pious person, you might have to go through trials and tribulations. This is the world. And through Bhishma, He taught that even if you are the greatest personality, but if you are on the wrong side, you will have to perish. And Bhishma understood this intention of Krishna and he cooperated with the will of Krishna, even though it was extremely painful for him. Pandavas were his favorite children, grandchildren. He didn't like what Duryodhana was doing. He knew it was adharma. But he still did not. And somebody might say, oh, he had made a promise to the throne that he would cooperate with whoever was sitting on the throne. Since Dhritarashtra was sitting, so he had to follow his instructions. But obligation is only binding when the result is good. And all this Bhishma tolerated. He had to tolerate all the conspiracies against the Pandavas. Every day almost there was a conspiracy to eliminate the Pandavas. And Bhishma was tolerating all this pain. He was tolerating Duryodhana's insults to his elders and disobedience. He had tolerated Draupadi's disrobing, which was kind of unheard of in those days. He tolerated that. He didn't speak a word. And then in the battlefield, he tolerated being against the Pandavas, against Krishna also. He was shooting arrows at Krishna. Krishna was bleeding. But only Krishna and Bhishma understood what was going on. Externally, it was a warrior trying to kill the chariot driver. Because the warriors in the battlefield, they dismantle the chariot, they kill the chariot driver so that the warrior on that chariot cannot move anywhere, kind of gets handicapped. So all this was very painful for the Bhishma, but he tolerated all that because he knew Krishna was using him as a puppet to teach a very powerful lesson to the whole world. He knew Krishna was using him as an instrument. He knew he had to cooperate with Krishna's will. And for that, he tolerated every type of pain. Then if that was not enough, Arjuna asked for the secret, how he could kill him. And he said, you should keep Shikhandi in front and then shoot arrows. There should not be any distance, even an inch, even an iota of distance between two arrows. So his whole body was pierced with arrows, and as he had mentioned, there should not be any distance left for even air to pass between the two arrows. That means there were more arrows in his body than the flesh at this moment. And he had the benediction to leave his body at will. He still didn't leave. He tolerated this pain also, physical pain, emotional, mental, physical. Every type of pain he tolerated in the service of Krishna happily. And nobody knew how exalted he was. But one person always knows Krishna, and he always makes the best arrangements for his devotees, especially when the time comes for them to leave this world. The whole world may not understand what devotional service a devotee is doing, but Krishna understands, and at the right moment, especially towards the end, he will reveal the glories of that devotee. So after the battle is over, Yudhishthira is feeling guilty. And all the rishis, the sages, his brothers, even Krishna tried to console him, make him feel better. But Yudhishthira was still so much in distress. He was lamenting, thinking that he was the cause of this entire massacre that took place on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So even Krishna failed. There is nothing that Krishna cannot do, but he deliberately failed. Because he wanted the whole world to now know Bhishma's glory. And he wanted Yudhishthira to be consoled by Bhishma's words, so that for all time to come, people would say that something that even Krishna could not do, Bhishma did it. Because Bhishma had exhibited such surrender, therefore now Krishna wanted to reciprocate with him and give him the best. And therefore he made such arrangements. He took all the Pandavas and told them to go to come to Bhishma on the battlefield where he was lying on the bed of arrows. In royal procession. Nobody goes to a person who is on the verge of death, dressed up like in a party attire, royal clothes. But Krishna wanted to fulfill each and every desire of Bhishma now and make him glorious forever. So the Pandavas went, and then Krishna is there. All the Brahma Rishis, all the Raja Rishis, who's who of the universe, have assembled to witness this glorious event and the event of passing away of Bhishma. And the perfection of human life is judged by Ante Narayana Smriti. How well we have lived our life is judged by only this one principle. Because human life is specially meant for ending the cycle of birth and death, transmigration of the soul. And that can only happen if we can remember the Lord at the last moment. Last thoughts decide where we go. So now The perfection of life is Ante Narayana Smriti, if we can somehow remember the Lord. But here Bhishma, because he has served the Lord with so much dedication and surrender, he cannot go and body is in excruciating pain. It's not that he was not remembering, but just to send a message across that if you serve Krishna nicely throughout our life, then if you are in a position physically, emotionally, we are going through some pain and we are not able to remember Krishna, Krishna will remember us, as Srila Prabhupada said. And therefore it was a point, because Bhishma could not go to Krishna, Krishna is personally coming to see him. And we know how Bhishma left his body looking at the beautiful face of Krishna. And his words consoled Yudhishthira Maharaj. And he was surrounded by the rishis, Maharishis, Devarishis and Rajarishis, everyone. Parashuram was there, Vyasadev was there, Asita Devala, Narada was there, Shukadev Goswami was there. So this is the kind of association Bhishma had when he was about to leave. And it was all the divine arrangement of Krishna, because Bhishma had exhibited such degree of surrender. And that's the reason in our Vaishnava calendar we have Bhishmashtami. There were so many powerful warriors and great devotees of Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, but none of their disappearance days are celebrated. Only Bhishma's day, Bhishmashtami, the day he passed away. And this is the period which is going on, starting from Uttarayana, Makar Sankranti, which is considered most auspicious, and that's when Bhishma leaves his body, as we'll hear in this chapter. So, this is Krishna's nature, that even if we do little for him, he never forgets. Even a little service rendered, he will remember it forever, and he will glorify that devotee forever. Relationship with Krishna is eternal, but the relationships of this world are only limited to this body. In the previous life, we don't remember who we were related to. Next life, we don't know. In this life, we come and by God's arrangement, we form a strong bonding with someone, and then suddenly we depart, we disappear. So, but Krishna, the relationship with Krishna is not like that, it is eternal. So Bhishma is such a great soul that Krishna is personally coming to see him. Not just giving him the remembrance, but Bhishma is not just remembering, he's seeing Krishna face to face, and that's how he leaves his body. And this was the reward for his service. Srila Prabhupada was once asked, what if we serve Krishna throughout our life, try our best to remember him, but at the end of our life, you're not in a position to remember him, then what? Because the last thoughts decide where we go. And Srila Prabhupada said, don't worry, Krishna will remember you. And in ISKCON also, we have seen so many devotees. When they were living, nobody actually knew their glory. And when they left, or they were leaving, that's when everything started manifesting. And everybody understood who these devotees were. There's a beautiful book called A Simple for the Simple. Mataji, who simply served devotees, simply serving prasadam and doing some little seva here and there. And what realizations Krishna gave her towards the end. Then there's another disciple of Srila Prabhupada, Mool Prakriti Devi Mataji. She has written a very, very beautiful book, Our Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to All, in which she has recorded the incidents of Prabhupada's life before he started ISKCON. She interviewed many, many people whom Srila Prabhupada came in touch with while he was living in Braj, Delhi, other places, and interactions with Prabhupada, and such details have come out, which increased Srila Prabhupada's glory so much. And towards the fag end of her life, she was diagnosed with terminal illness. And she just loved to glorify Prabhupada. That was her life. And even when she would go through excruciating pain, when she would start talking about Prabhupada, she would immediately become very animated, and a smile would appear on her face. And that was the only time when she would feel happy and no pain. That was her life. But when she was about to leave, she left in Vrindavan, surrounded by many great devotees. Giriraj Maharaj was there and many other devotees. So she, Prabhupada was her life. Glorifying Prabhupada was her like food. And that was nourishing her. So towards the end of her life, when she was in her last days, she was getting a constant vision continuously. This story is a proof that what Prabhupada has given us, the process that he has given us, it really works. It's not a hoax. So we just have to be patient and continue serving. Bhakti is simple for the simple. You don't even need to do great things to achieve the perfection of life. Sometimes we might become competitive, we might feel envious, but how does that matter? Ultimately, the goal is the same. The goal is to please Krishna, and the destination remains the same. Even if somebody is doing big things and somebody is doing small things, as long as they are pleasing Krishna, they are both going to go to Golok Vrindavan. There's nothing beyond somebody who's doing great service, oh, he will go to Golok and he'll be somewhere else. No. It's all about pleasing the Lord with whatever capacity. So there's no question of envy or competitiveness. So she was getting a constant vision, regularly, frequent vision, every now and then, which she revealed to, I think, Giriraj Maharaj or some devotee. And she said, this is a vision she's getting almost every day, that she sees herself in the middle of a forest. And then there is another beautiful forest right in front, which is so lush green, countless flowers, divine fragrance, and there are so many people living in that forest, and they are dancing, jumping, they are so blissful, they are looking so happy. And she says, I ran to that forest, but I realized it had a gate which was closed, it was locked. And she wanted to participate. She wanted to go into that forest where there was so much bliss. People were dancing, singing. Everybody looked so happy. But when she saw that it was locked, the door was locked, she became desperate. And she looked around and she saw one great personality, one great devotee she had taken shelter of after Srila Prabhupada left this world. And she ran up to him. He simply stopped her like this. He put his hand like this and he pointed in another direction. And then she looked in that direction and she sees a tiny figure wearing saffron robes appears from behind the bushes and is walking towards her. And as she is trying to concentrate, trying to find out, figure out who this person is, then she realizes this person is carrying a stick. And as he gets closer, she realizes it is Srila Prabhupada. She goes and falls at his feet. Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I want to go and enter this forest. I also want to be with them. There's so much happiness out there. And Prabhupada looks at her with a compassionate eyes. And he says, my dear daughter, don't worry. When the right time comes, I will come and open it for you. And this was the vision she was getting regularly. And the moment she passed away, everybody, Giriraj Maharaj was there and everyone else, everyone had the same realization that when Mool Prakriti Devi Mataji passed away, everyone could feel the presence of a strong, powerful spiritual energy within that room. And their realization was, Prabhupada, as had promised, he had come to open the doors to the spiritual world for her. So, what Srila Prabhupada has given, chant Hare Krishna and follow four principles. These two things are enough, do's and don'ts. If we have to get cured, if we are suffering from a disease, so the doctor tells us do's and don'ts. Don't eat this and eat this or have this medicine. So the medicine is chanting Hare Krishna, don'ts may following the four principles. And Srila Prabhupada has promised in this very lifetime, and to your capacity, try to serve the mission. And within this lifetime itself, you will go back to Godhead. This is Srila Prabhupada's promise. If Krishna had promised, we would have doubted, maybe. Sometimes Krishna, it's very difficult to understand him, he breaks his own promises for a higher reason. But because Srila Prabhupada has promised it, Krishna has to fulfill it. If you just do these two things, and keeping the goal in mind. Srila Prabhupada said, somebody asked, how can we become free from envy? And Srila Prabhupada replied, by making the spiritual world as the goal of your life. Because if that is the goal, how does it matter what happens in this material world? Because my goal is not the name, fame, adoration. My goal is the spiritual world. My goal is not this. So anyone who serves Krishna will be rewarded. And it could be the last moment, it could be the last few moments, it could be the last few years, it could be entire lifetime. But anyone who is dedicated to Krishna's service will be blessed. So that is what we learn from Bhishma's life. Throughout his life, he exhibited such surrender, such devotion, such dedication, tolerated everything. And now Krishna came to give him the reward. Like when people graduate also, it's not that all the 4 years and they keep getting a medal every day. The medal comes at the end of the graduation. Similarly, what we are doing sadhana bhakti is like preparing for that graduation ceremony. When Krishna can come, Prabhupada can come, Guru can come and give us that medal for the tremendous service that a devotee has done. Today also happens to be a very, very auspicious day, which is the disappearance day of one of the greatest exponents of devotion, Srimad Madhvacharya, who is seated here in his divine form. Srimad Madhvacharya, because ISKCON is a part of Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So Srimad Madhvacharya is a very, very important link in our Sampradaya. He was born in Pajaka Kshetra near Udupi, a very, very special holy place, to Madhya Geha Bhatt, his father's name. And right from his childhood, he was extremely effulgent and exhibited some supernatural powers. His parents had no child for a long, long time. They performed austerities. And then one fine day, Ananteshwara temple in Udupi, the priest suddenly went to a raised platform and he started announcing, the Lord was speaking through him, that very soon the incarnation of Vayudev will appear in this world to carry out the mission of the Lord. And a little bit later, Madhya Geha Bhatt's wife gave birth to an effulgent child. He was named Vasudeva. And he exhibited supernatural powers right from his childhood. It is mentioned that once his father was in debt and the moneylender was coming again and again. So understanding his father's anxiety, little Vasudev, he just gave some tamarind seeds to this person. And he was like, this is a child. He was so innocent and sweet. This person took it smilingly. But when he actually looked at it, they were gold coins. So he freed his father from this debt. He was little baby. There was a demon of the name Maniman who was living close to Madhvacharya's home in the form of his snake. And little Vasudev just killed him with the toe of his left foot. And he would go out to play. But sometimes his mother would get anxious. It's been long. Vasudev has not come back. As soon as he would understand mother is getting anxious, in one jump, wherever he was, he would just appear in front of her. Appear in front of his mother. No matter where he was. In one jump. Because after all, the incarnation of Vayudev. So, Among the demigods, not everybody is a pure devotee, but some of them are, like Yamaraj and Suryadev, Vivaswan, who was given the Bhagavad Gita, and there may be many others, but Vayudev for sure. Because whenever the Lord appears, the demigods all appear to assist him in his mission. But Vayudev always has a special position. He appeared as Hanuman in Lord Ram's Leela. Then he appears as Bhim in Lord Krishna's Leela. Then he appears as the great Madhvacharya. So very, very powerful personality. And after his Upanayana Samskar was performed, he started looking for a guru. And he found his guru in Achyuta Preksha, the renowned teacher of the time. He was but a Mayavadi, follower of Shankaracharya. Because at that time, before Madhvacharya, Shankaracharya's philosophy was quite prevalent. And to defeat this philosophy, Madhvacharya had been sent. So he had to take, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas from a person who was from Shankara Sampradaya. So, branding, that was a brand at that time. So they made use of it, but did their own thing. So at the age of 11, he decided to take sannyas. But his parents, who had got a child after such a long time, that's such a cute child, they were not ready to give him permission, and he wanted permission. So finally, he left home and started living with his guru, Achyut Pariksha, at his ashram. They went on a pilgrimage. Father came running behind him. They brought him back. He said, if you don't give me permission to take sannyas, then you will never see my face again. But if you give me permission, I'll keep coming back to see you. You will see me. Then they reluctantly had to give permission. But they said, you are all only child. They said, if you get one more child, will you give me permission? They said, yes. By his blessings, his mother delivered another child. But still they were not ready to let him go. Then he had to blackmail them. If you don't allow me to go, you will never see me. And then they gave him permission. He was named Purna Pragya. And that was his name. So, then he traveled. He was just, I don't remember the exact age, but he started traveling to various places. He defeated people who followed Shankara's philosophy. So many people became his disciples. And many, many glorious events took place in his presence. And I will speak about one particular event. Now, his guru was deeply steeped in Mayavad philosophy. Now, he would try and preach to his guru. The disciple is trying to preach to his guru. But guru was reading Shankaracharya's Vedanta Sutra commentary, and he was completely influenced by it, no matter how much Madhvacharya tried. So that's when a realization dawned upon him that he needed to have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, because that was considered the ultimate at that time. So therefore he decided to travel to Badrinath to meet his guru Vyasadeva, the divine sage Vyasadeva. And Udupi is in south, and he had to go to Adi Badri, even beyond this Badri Vishal, which people generally visit. And there were no planes, no vehicles. He walked with all his disciples. And when they came to Badri Vishal, he entered the inner sanctum, the temple of Badrinath, and all his disciples were sitting outside. And he had also written a commentary on Bhagavad Gita at that time. So he wanted Vyasadeva's blessings for that also. And he knew that he wouldn't be able to write Vedanta Sutra without the blessings of Vyasadeva. He had to have the understanding. So he shut the doors of the temple altar. He sat inside. He fasted. He didn't speak to anyone for 40 days, preparing himself for his meeting with Vyasadeva. Because he was going to meet such a great soul, so he had to prepare himself. Even though he was completely purified. And there he showed his commentary to the deity of Badri Vishal. And there was a resounding voice from the deity blessing him for this commentary. Because in this commentary he begins by offering pranams to Lord Narayan, then divine sage Vyasadeva. Then the deity spoke that you have all my blessings. And he also blessed him for his meeting with Vyasadeva. We can't meet great souls without the blessings of the Lord. So Vyasadeva was a great soul, and Madhvacharya had to take blessings from the Lord to have his association. It is easier to meet God than to meet his pure devotees. We come in their association. Prahlad, Dhruva, whenever they were asked to ask for a benediction, this is one of the things they asked. Let me always be in the association of your devotees. The Lord is standing in front of them, but they said, we want the association of a devotee. That means the association of the pure devotees of the Lord is greater than the personal darshan of the Lord. Because if the Lord is pleased with us, he will give us the association of his devotees. So this is the greatest gift of the Lord. Because he also stays there. And this is his heart. Devotees are my heart. He says, Sadhu Namrdayam Mahiyam. So after receiving the blessings of Badri Vishal, Madhvacharya started walking. He left his disciples behind because it was a journey that nobody could undertake. They had to go beyond the snow-capped mountains of Himalayas, the regions which were inaccessible to humans. We can read that in Mahabharata also. Pandavas also went there and they had to take help of Ghatotkach. They couldn't, because this earthly region is separated by big mountains. And not easy for humans to access those regions. But one day, so Madhvacharya said, I'm going on this journey. So if I don't come back, please carry on this great mission. So one disciple, Satyatirtha, who was awarded sannyas by Madhvacharya, he couldn't tolerate a separation. He started following Madhvacharya. And they started in the morning. By sunset, Madhvacharya was still walking very fast, swiftly. And Satyatirtha kept on walking. He was running literally. Still he was not able to keep up with Madhvacharya. And at point came, he was completely exhausted. And there was no point of return. He couldn't reach. And he couldn't walk any further with that much strength left. So Madhvacharya just looked behind and he just waved his hand. Vayudev. And immediately Satyatirtha landed in Badrika Ashram, where all his other disciples, Madhvacharya's other disciples, were staying in one moment. And then Madhvacharya continued his journey. And after crossing these snow-capped mountains, he came to a beautiful region in the Himalayas, on the banks of the river Saraswati. So Vyasadeva's ashram is not like, oh, only there is snow. No, it's a beautiful ashram. There are gardens, valleys, lakes, mountains, everything is there. And there he saw, under a tree, Vyasadeva, who is still living, seated. And in front of him were seated all the great rishis of the universe who were learning scriptures from Vyasadeva. Madhvacharya went and he surrendered his life fully at Vyasadeva's lotus feet. And there Vyasadeva then taught Madhvacharya for many days and approved his commentary on Bhagavad Gita and also blessed him to write Vedanta Sutra. He said, I will speak through you. You go and write a commentary on Vedanta Sutra now. And I will speak through you, don't worry. So Madhvacharya now, after his blessings, he left. And he came to Badrika Ashram, where his other disciples were, and they started walking back. And Madhvacharya started speaking. And Satyatirtha kept noting down everything. He became the scribe. And even before they reached the plains of India, they exited the Himalayan region, the commentary on Vedanta Sutra was complete by blessings. It becomes easier and swiftly we can complete accomplished tasks. So the first copy of that Vedanta Sutra commentary was sent to his guru Achyut Pariksha. I think two reasons, because he was the guru. Secondly, he needed to hear this the most. And Achyut Pariksha, when he read that commentary, and Madhvacharya came and he preached to him about the principles of devotional service. And eventually Achyut Pariksha accepted Madhvacharya as his guru. So the disciple became the guru of his guru. Unheard of. And he was later given the name, I forgot the name. He was given sannyas also. So one important thing I forgot to mention, when Madhvacharya was about to depart for Badrikashram, he was telling his disciples that, before he told them that if I don't come back, carry on this mission, he said, I'm going on this journey, arduous journey, and I have nothing with me except the firm conviction that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and pure devotional service is the only way to achieve his lotus feet. See, this is the only thing I have, this conviction, and this is what I'm going with. So somebody who has conviction, like Srila Prabhupada said, if you are convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we can conquer the whole world in 18 days. But we say, but sometimes, like His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj once said, yes, it is very difficult to preach, to practice what we preach. But then he said, it is even more difficult to believe what we preach. So then, so Maharaj made this statement, quite a humbling statement. Yes, we can speak externally, but do we have that same conviction also? If we have the same conviction, then Krishna can empower us beyond our limits. So Madhvacharya, then he established the supremacy of Dvaita philosophy. Shankara's philosophy is Advaita. God and living entities are one. And he firmly established that no, God and living entities are two, separate. We are servants, God is the master. And that's why you see him sitting also with two fingers. So Buddhism was zero. Everything is shunya. Shankaracharya came with one. He's like this, everything is one. Shankaracharya said, no, it's two. So they were counting. And even in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the essence of all the Sampradaya, therefore what we have is the essence of all the four disciplic successions, Sampradayas, the essence of all the philosophies, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given, and then Srila Prabhupada passed it down to us, receiving it from the previous great Acharyas. So in one book, so even Jiva Goswami, he found the Gaudiya philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva in Madhva's Bhagavat Parya. Even Madhvacharya talks about this. And even the Goswami studied his works. So in Vaishnava Siddhanta Mala, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has ordered all Gaudiya Vaishnavas to carefully observe the nine instructions of truth given by Sri Madhvacharya through our Guru Parampara. And what were those nine teachings of Madhvacharya which show his firm conviction? Bhagavan Sri Krishna alone is the supreme absolute truth, one without a second. He is the object of knowledge in all the Vedas. Number three, the universe is real, satya. Number four, the differences between Ishvara, God, Jiva, the soul, and matter are real. They are not one. Jiva, souls, are by nature the servants of the Supreme Lord Hari. There are two categories of Jivas, liberated and illusioned. Number seven, liberation or moksha means attaining the lotus feet of Bhagavan Krishna. In other words, entering an eternal relationship of service to the Supreme Lord. And you see, all this we find in Srila Prabhupada's books. That liberation means
engaging in the devotional service of the Lord. Number 8. Pure devotional service to Krishna is the only way to attain this liberation. The truth may be, number 9, the truth may be known by pratyaksha, direct perception, anumana, inference or logic, shabda, spiritual sound or Vedic authority. So, he was traveling to various holy places, defeating the Mayavad and so many incidents we could talk about. We don't have much time, but some significant events we could just touch upon. So, a point came where he again decides to meet Vyasadeva after the most glorious event in his life, where one day Madhvacharya suddenly felt, he was feeling that today Krishna is going to come to him, and he went to the seashore to take bath. And he was composing beautiful prayers in glorification of Krishna. Dwadasha Stotra. He sat on the seashore and he was still composing, glorifying Krishna in great ecstasy. In Kirtan, in Sankirtan they were going. He sat and suddenly he sees a ship which was caught in a windstorm. And it seemed there was no hope. And at that time, all the people in the ship, they saw this effulgent personality seated on the seashore. Madhvacharya simply just waved his cloth and the windstorm just disappeared and the ship came to the safer spot. And the owner of the ship, who was carrying a lot of things for his business, he wanted to offer anything that Madhvacharya wanted that was there on the ship. He said, just give me, you are coming from Dwarka, so give me some Gopi Chandan. So they gave him a mound of Gopi Chandan and it was carried to Udupi, where his ashram was. And it just broke open into two pieces. And from this Gopi Chandan appeared the most beautiful form of Udupi Krishna, which is served till date. So Madhvacharya appeared in 13th century. He installed the deity personally. He set these standards. He gave sannyas to 8 prominent disciples and they would take turns to worship this deity. So even now, earlier they were changing in 2 days, now it's 2 years. So that means only after say 14 years, the sannyasi of a particular mathi, he had established 18 mathas also. So only after 14 years, each sannyasi and his assistant sannyasi, who would be the future head of that matha, they get the right to worship the deity or physically touch the deity. And he set such intricate standards of worship that right from the Brahma Mota till late at night, there is something going on. And those standards are followed even till date. So this is the true glory of an acharya. How do we know whether a particular spiritual preceptor or a teacher is a great personality? Everybody can make a show of being great. Aajkal to anybody can have a PR team and you can buy followers on Instagram and you can buy views, likes, everything. But how do we judge whether a person is an acharya? That even after he is gone, for all time to come, his legacy continues. Like we have Srila Prabhupada's legacy or the other previous acharyas in our line, Madhvacharya's legacy. So after Udupi Krishna came, the deity worship started and he served with such devotion that even though the turn comes after 14 years, but those 14 years are spent in preparing for those 2 years of worship, collecting resources, money, whatever, and preparing oneself. It is done with so much devotion and care. So after this, again Madhvacharya decided to, he had a feeling, he wanted to again go and meet Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva is again in Adi Badri, again walked back, again he went to Badrika Ashram, took blessings of the Lord. And then he met Vyasadeva again. Vyasadeva embraced him with so much love and affection, his dear disciple. And Vyasadeva, out of great affection, he gave him 8 Shaligram Shilas, own Shaligram Shilas. And he also instructed Madhvacharya to write a commentary on Mahabharata. So Madhvacharya brought those Shaligram Shilas
and he gave it to 8 disciples. And all those 8 Shaligram Shilas can still be found in those 8 Mathas being worshipped with the same standard that he set 800 years ago. So, original personal Shaligram Shilas of Vyasadeva from Adi Badri. You can say from the celestial world. So, Madhvacharya, because we know he is Bhim, during his travels he came to Kurukshetra once. And he was explaining, because he is Bhim, so he is obviously partial to Bhim. So he sat down among his disciples. He was explaining about the exploits of Bhima in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And then he took all his disciples to an agricultural field, a paddy field. And he told his disciples to dig. Disciples didn't understand what is happening. Why is Gurudev asking? So they were bewildered, but they kept on digging. And from that, suddenly, Madhvacharya pulled out something huge. And what was it? Disciples were bewildered to see this. It was the club of Bhima. Because he only knew, he was Bhima. So he said, with this I did this, I killed this, I pulverized. He said, I did not just kill the Kauravas with this club, I pulverized elephants. And this was Dwapar Yuga, elephants were even bigger. And I pulverized them. He spoke everything about what he did with this club. He was in great ecstasy. And then he put it back in the soil, and to this day it has not been seen again, because only he knows where it is. So like this, Madhvacharya's glorious life, and his life is specially dedicated to, we can just go on talking, but time is limited. But especially he focused on defeating the philosophy of Advaitavad. He focused how Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and we and God both are different. We can never become one with God. We are servants of God. He is great. We are small. And only through pure devotional service can he be understood as he is. Hare Krishna. Shri Madhvacharya ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.